water flow, prancing, dancing, see the water flow. Oh, wizard of changes, water, water, water.
Good evening, K-Squid listeners. It's every other Sunday again, and you're listening to Sustainability Now, a radio show focused on environment, sustainability, and social justice in the Monterey Bay region, California, and the world. This is Ronnie Lipschitz, your host. Today's show is about the human right to clean and safe water. Most of our listeners are probably used to turning on the tap in their house and getting water as they desire. Not everyone is so fortunate. There are almost 800 million people in the world who lack access to an improved water supply. And even in the United States, access to clean and safe water is not guaranteed. In a July 2020 op-ed in the San Jose Mercury News, Senator Kamala Harris reported that at least 2 million people in the United States lack reliable running water and sanitation. Many more are impacted by unsafe water. A recent report found that between 2016 and 2019, nearly 130 million people got their tap water from systems in violation of federal safety laws. And she continued, about 1 million Californians, disproportionately farm worker and frontline communities, currently do not have safe drinking water. My guest today is Myra Hernandez, who is a community organizer at the Community Water Center in Watsonville. We're going to talk about safe water, health, access, and the human right to water, especially across the Monterey Bay region and South Santa Cruz County. The Community Water Center works towards realizing the human right to water for all communities in California through education, organizing, and advocacy. The center has offices in Visalia, Sacramento, and Watsonville. Myra, welcome to Sustainability Now.
Hi, good afternoon.
It's nice to have you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Why don't we start the show by having you tell us something about the Community Water Center, its missions and activities?
Yeah, sure thing. So Community Water Center, or CWC for short, is a nonprofit organization that works to ensure that all Californians have access to safe, clean, and affordable drinking water. And as you mentioned, you know, we know that currently more than 1 million Californians are exposed to unsafe drinking water from their taps, which is pretty alarming. So our mission is to act as a catalyst for community-driven drinking water solutions, and we do that through organizing, education, and advocacy, specifically here in California. And, you know, our work focuses on working alongside low-income communities and communities of color around drinking water quality issues and groundwater sustainability issues. And our strategies include, you know, organizing the community, connecting them to resources, and making sure that our community partners have access to accurate information in their language so that they have a better understanding of the issues that are impacting them and their community, so that they can essentially become their own advocates and advocate for whatever needs they may have.
So how did you come to work for the CWC? Maybe you can tell us something about your background and interest in education.
Yeah, sure thing. So I'm originally from Merced, California, which is in the Central Valley. And I am a first-generation student that moved to Santa Cruz in 2015. To attend UC Santa Cruz, where I studied anthropology, but my focus was really in cultural anthropology. And during that time, I learned about the social and environmental issues that impacted many low-income communities, not only in California, but all around, through some research that I did on commodity chains, specifically the blackberry commodity chain. And so from that moment on, you know, I knew that I wanted to be a part of a movement that advocated for those folks, that advocated with and for those that couldn't really do it themselves, right? So after graduating in 2018, I was researching different organizations that did that type of work. And approximately 6 months after my graduation, I found that CWC was opening up a office in Watsonville, and they were hiring, so I applied, and here I am now.
And what kind of work do you do at the CWC?
Yeah, so, you know, I do the on-the-ground work, which has changed a little since COVID. But essentially, you know, I would go do our door-to-door outreach, seeing what questions, knowledge, concerns folks have around water quality. I connect them to resources, and then I also help communities facilitate community meetings where there is a dialogue about water quality issues that are impacting them. But I also do work around, you know, our policy work around groundwater issues. So I do a little bit of everything, but, you know, mainly focused on making sure that our community partners are being informed and have access to resources.
Who specifically is your constituency?
So we primarily work in unincorporated areas, and that primarily is low-income communities and communities of color.
I mean, hold on a second. And what in you're primarily working in South County, right? And so are the people who you're helping, are they farm workers or, you know, who in particular?
Yeah, the majority of them are farm workers. So we are currently working more in the northern Monterey County area.
Okay.
And, you know, it's pretty diverse. There's farm workers. There's, you know, there's some folks that work for the school. There's teachers. It's a wide variety, but most of them are farm workers.
How many people do you think in all in the two counties, you know, lack access to safe drinking water? Do you have any idea?
Too many.
I know, but you know, numbers are always impress people. Well, let's come back to that question, okay, in a little while.
Yeah.
Maybe you can tell us something about the history of the CWC and, you know, who founded it and when and why.
Yeah, of course. So CWC was co-founded by Susana Vanda and Laurel Firestone over 14 years ago in the Central Valley. And so Susana Vanda is our current executive director, and Laurel Firestone was recently appointed as a board member to the State Water Board. And so they formed the Community Water Center mainly to address the water contamination that communities in the San Joaquin Valley were struggling with. So early on, Susana studied water quality reports from the valley, which indicated that residents were being exposed to contaminants such as nitrate and arsenic. And she also discovered that the Tulare County general plan had no real commitment to ensure safe drinking water for 16 local communities, which the county deemed to, quote, have no authentic future. So therefore, the water infrastructure in these farm worker communities, you know, it was old, it was depleted and leaking. So Susana, you know, she went door to door to share her findings and asked residents if, you know, they would drink the water from their tap. And, you know, the answers throughout the region, they were resounding. And they said, no, we don't drink it because we don't trust it. And so the pair organized community by community, and it was clear that the issue was widespread and that residents lacked information on water quality and, most importantly, on what they could do about it, like what were the solutions, both interim and long-term. Didn't have any idea on how to even start approaching those, right? So they formed a community water center and organized community members to address these challenges.
What were people doing then to get clean water? I mean, if they didn't trust the water system, what did they do?
Yeah, so most people that know that they can't drink the water but usually don't know why, they usually resort to, you know, buying bottled water at the store. You know, it can be either reusable drugs that they refill at a dispensary, or it's just a plastic one-use bottled water.
Yeah, it's worth noting that generally speaking, you know, water from your tap costs less than a fraction of a cent a gallon, whereas if you have to go and buy bottled water, it's sometimes several dollars a gallon, which makes a big difference. On the other hand, you're much more careful about how you use water. I'm curious, what does that phrase, no authentic future, mean?
You know, that's a great question. There were primarily communities that were farm worker communities. And, you know, essentially they didn't see a future in those communities just because they were farm worker communities.
So the idea was that they would relocate into the valley cities or something like that. Although I sort of guess that the situation may not be that much better, even if you're living in some of these cities.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk a little bit about the health issues. You know, it may seem obvious to our listeners, but it's also always worth talking about. You know, why is clean, mm-hmm. safe water so important?
Well, you know, we like to say water is life, and we can't survive without safe water, right? We have to drink water every day. And yet the reality is that over 1 million Californians are exposed to unsafe drinking water in their homes, schools, and communities. And, you know, this number it only accounts for public water systems that are usually within city limits, and it doesn't account for the private and shared wells that are in the unincorporated areas, right?
Okay. Uh-huh.
So we at CWC believe that access to safe drinking water is a right. It's not a privilege. And in 2012, California adopted the Human Right to Water Law, which, you know, recognizes that every human being has the right to safe, clean, affordable, and accessible water adequate for human consumption, cooking, and sanitary purposes. And then in 2018, Monterey County Board of Supervisors unanimously passed a Human Right to Water Declaration, becoming the first county to do so, which, you know, also states the same thing as the Human Right to Water Law. And so, therefore, access to safe, clean, and affordable drinking water is important because it's a human right.
Well, you know, I want to come back to this topic a little bit later, this idea of a human right to water, and, you know, maybe explore it a little bit, not because I want to put you in a difficult spot, but there are economists who argue that water should be treated as a commodity, you know, as something that has a price. And it's not just simply a right. And so that's also something that's worth talking about, not because I favor charging people, you know, outrageous sums for water, but there are arguments about that. I've lost track of what I was going to follow up with. Oh, yeah, how well is the state fulfilling this particular section of the California Water Code?
So, you know, we're making progress, but we still have a long ways to go. For example, Governor Gavin Newsom signed SB 200 back in July 24th of 2019, which established the Safe and Affordable Drinking Water Fund. And this fund is a vital part of the Safe and Affordable Funding for Equity and Resilience, also known as the SAFER program. And it promises to invest over $1.4 billion over the next 10 years for safe drinking water solutions for Californians who are fighting for safe water in their communities. That was a great achievement for our movement back in 2019. And now we are currently working on, you know, implementing solutions with those funds, both here in the Central Coast and in the Central Valley.
Okay, listen, I have to take a short break, and then we'll come back and continue our discussion. You're listening to Sustainability Now on Community Radio, KSQD 90.7 FM on your radio dial, and KSQD.org streaming on the internet. Over to you, Alex.
Thanks, Ronnie. KSQD thanks the 250 listeners who contributed more than $30,000 during our recent pledge drive. Your support makes it possible to bring you the many diverse programs you hear every day on KSQD, and we are grateful. Listener support is essential to the ongoing operation of Community Radio KSQD. If you haven't recently contributed, please make a tax-deductible donation at ksqd.org, and thank you. Back to sustainability now.
This is Sustainability Now. I'm Ronnie Lipschitz, and my guest today is Myra Hernandez, who works at the Community Water Center in Watsonville. And we're talking about the human right to safe water and health access and water issues in the state. So, Myra, I wonder, do you have any idea what the cost, if let's just say the state were to bring all water systems up to code, particularly the ones that are not, you know, serving populations at this point. Do you have any idea how much that would cost?
A lot of money.
I'm trying to get a sense of whether this $1.4 billion is an enormous contribution or whether, let's say, the cost is $10 billion to actually improve water systems. It sounds like a lot, but I know, you know, from research that that infrastructure in the United States requires several trillion dollars to bring up to standard, and I'm assuming similar numbers apply to California. That's why I'm asking. Not trying to put you on the spot, just that's why I'm asking.
No, yeah, of course. You know, based on what I've seen with projects throughout California, it really ranges. It really depends on, you know, what the contaminant is, what the treatment system is. You know, there's a lot of options for treatment systems. You know, there's consolidation, there's wellhead treatment. There's a lot of things that you can do. So it really, the cost is based on what the treatment will be or what the solution is, right? So it can go from, you know, $1 million to up to, you know, $5, $6, $7 million dollars. Mm-hmm. It really depends. It depends on what solution is being looked at and for what specific contaminant.
Yeah, so tell us something about these contaminants. What sorts of things are found in you know, water systems and in wells?
Yeah, so, you know, there's a lot of contaminants that we're finding both here in the Central Coast and in the Central Valley. Some of the most common ones are, you know, nitrate, arsenic, 1,2,3 trichloropropane, chrome 6. Nitrate contamination can occur due to the overapplication of fertilizers that contain nitrogen, and additional sources can also include, you know, animal and human waste, including dairies, septic tanks, and sewer systems. So that's one of the contaminants that we're seeing mostly here in the Central Coast, and we're seeing it at very high levels. It's, you know, throughout the 14 years that CWC has been doing this type of work, we're seeing levels that are three times or four times over the maximum contaminant level, which is pretty high. And then, you know, we have 1,2,3 trichloropropane, which is a synthetic chemical that was manufactured by Shell Oil and Dow Chemical Company, and it was used as an additive in pesticides prior to the 1980s. And, you know, apparently the use of this contaminant was outlawed in the 80s, but we're still finding it in our groundwater because it is extremely consistent and it remains in groundwater for a very long time. And so, you know, if folks consume water with these contaminants, it can have, health impacts. And then with 1,2,3 TCP, this is a contaminant that one can be exposed through showering. You know, so for example, for nitrate, we can tell folks, you know, the way to reduce being exposed to this contaminant is, you know, drink bottled water. But for 123 TCP, it's a bit challenging because you can't tell folks not to shower, right? So the best we can do is let them know that they can reduce the time that they shower and use colder water, because it's through the hot water, through the steam, that one can be exposed to this contaminant. And, you know, it can cause, like, skin rashes. It can, you know, ultimately lead to cancer in some extreme cases.
And you mentioned arsenic. Where does that come from?
So arsenic is naturally occurring in the soil. And, it, you know, it's just something that is in the soil. And it can come from, you know, overpumping, you know, our groundwater. And we see more and more of it in our groundwater, and obviously in the water that we're using from the tap. But it's unfortunately naturally reoccurring, and there's not much we can do to stop that contamination.
Mm. Do you see it mostly in wells then, or in surface water?
I would say, you know, it's a combination of both, but I would say from my experience, I do see it more in well water, and I do work more with groundwater than surface water.
Uh-huh. Is that a primary source for the areas in which you're working, you know, in
Correct.
South Santa Cruz uh-huh. County and Monterey County? It's mostly well water.
Uh-huh. Yeah?
Okay.
Uh-huh.
So on the website, it says that CWC is providing safe drinking water to, you know, Central Coast households. And I'm sort of wondering, how do you do that?
Yeah, so we have the free regional bottled water program for Central mm-hmm. Coast households that we launched back in May of this year. And so essentially this program came about because we were facilitating the Central Coast Regional Water Board's free well testing program that analyzes for 18 different parameters. And we were finding high levels of contamination throughout, you know, Monterey County, San Benito County. And so this program provides an immediate source of safe drinking water for low-income households that rely on contaminated drinking water wells through a biweekly bottled water delivery service, where they can receive up to 10 reusable 5-gallon jugs of water. And so Community Water Center has a contract with the state Water Resources Control Board to implement this program. And, you know, we plan to work with all program participants to support long-term drinking water solutions. So mm-hmm. we only believe that drinking bottled water is an interim solution. Right.
Uh-huh.
So we
yeah.
want to make sure that folks get to a place where they have a long-term solution implemented.
So CWC has we've been working on various community projects, right, to bring clean water to various communities. Can you talk a bit about those?
We've been working with many communities. You know, specifically right now, we're working with a community that is in the northern Monterey County area, which is north of Moss Landing, so right between Highway 1 and the coast. Mm-hmm. And that is where we started organizing here in the Central Coast when we first opened up our office. And so in this community, we saw that folks had high levels, again, of nitrate, 1,2,3, trichloropropane, chrome-6, arsenic. And we helped them create a community-based organization. And their name is El Comité para Tener Agua Sana, Limpia y Económica, or in English, the Committee for Safe and Affordable Drinking Water. And mm-hmm. so through that, this committee has been meeting monthly since February of 2019, and they've been working to find both interim and long-term solutions for their community. And so they have the interim solution now, which is the free delivery bottled water service. And currently, we are working on having an alternative analysis study be done for the community. And so what the study will do is it looks at all the possible solution options. And so, again, that may be consolidation, wellhead treatment, point of use or point of entry treatment. It's going to look at all of those possible solutions and look at the costs as well. And once we have that report, which will be done by an engineering firm, we will look at it, discuss it, and then see what the best solution is for that community. And then help them, get funding for it and then, implement it. And so this is the type of work that we do, and we try to repeat it in every community that we start organizing in. Because mm-hmm. when we start organizing in a community, it's for the long term.
Okay. And when you're going into a community to organize, what's your approach? How do you identify places, and how do you bring people in?
Yeah, so the way that we identify places is, we look at the resources that are out there. So county data, the state water board data. We look at where contamination is being found, and then we also look at what communities are low-income communities, and like I said, we primarily focus in unincorporated areas.
Right.
And so we use different tools to locate those communities, and then once we have a community in mind, we conduct our door-to-door outreach where we gauge what knowledge, questions, concerns folks may have around their drinking water. And then we also, the first question that we ask is, do you know where your water comes from? If people don't know, then we help them figure it out. And very similar to what the center was doing in the Central Valley, here we also ask, do you drink your tap water? And most of the answers were, no, we don't. And then it's like, why? They're like, I don't know. We just don't. People tell us it's bad, so we don't, right? And so that's when we start connecting folks to resources like the free well testing program that we have here in the Central Coast. And so once we start gauging folks by having these questions, they become more interested and want to learn more, right? Mm-hmm. And so by participating in the well testing program, we get all the results, and we formulate it in a way that is understandable, and we go back to the households, and we go through each report and let them know what it means. So, for example, if they have high levels of nitrate, 1-3 TCP, we let them know. We let them know what the difference is between a maximum contaminant level and a public health goal. And then we let them know, how to reduce being exposed to these contaminants. And so once we start, that process, we start building a relationship with folks. And then we start holding consistent monthly in-person meetings in the community. Mm-hmm. And like the example I just shared, in this community, folks were interested. They saw that there was an issue in their community, and they're like, okay, what do we have to do? What's the next step? How can we get a solution? What's the interim solution? Like, is there any way to get free bottled water? This was a dialogue that was happening between community members themselves. And it was just us providing that initial information of, hey, look, there's an issue, right? Mm-hmm. We really believe that la unión hace la fuerza, which essentially means that there is power in unity. So we always help communities form a CBO or a community-based organization. Uh-huh. And we have these consistent monthly meetings where we provide accurate, understandable information about water quality, resources, and opportunities to engage so that our community partners are better informed and they feel empowered to speak up and advocate for their community. So the main reason why there's a free bottled water service in this community is because folks went to a board meeting, their public community service district's board meeting, and they're like, hey, we have an issue, and we know that you can apply for this state funding to have this service for us. You know, this is only an interim solution. Yeah. And after hearing their stories, you know, they're like, yeah, we'll do it. This is, you know, something, it's a right, and you guys have the right to have safe drinking water. And so that's why now over 80 households in that area are eligible to receive this program. Mm-hmm. And up to date, we have signed up, you know, I think it's around 63 households that are currently receiving the service since July of 2019.
Mm-hmm. I need to take a break, and so we'll come back in just a moment. You're listening to Sustainability Now on KSQD, your community radio at 90.7 FM, and streaming at ksqd.org on the internet. Alex?
Community radio gives you, whenever I turn it on in the car, I don't know what's going to be. And it's just a really refreshing thing. And I'm always hearing incredible stuff. And K-Squid doesn't have this mainstream sort of flavor to it. It reaches a lot of political spectrum that I really appreciate.
Back to you, Ronnie.
That sounded like Chris Krohn. Before we go back to our show, I just wanted Tiffany Wise West, who is the Santa Cruz City Climate Coordinator, asked me to announce a workshop that she has organized. It's the Resilient Coast Santa Cruz Virtual Community Workshop. It's on Tuesday, November 17th from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on Zoom. Resilient Coast Santa Cruz is a grant-funded initiative to develop a plan and policies for resilient future coastal management in the context of climate change. At this workshop, you can meet city and consultant teams, learn how previous community feedback has been integrated over the two-year initiative, and provide input on the recommended strategies to address coastal erosion, flooding, and sea level rise. This interactive workshop will be available both in Spanish and English and followed by an extended Q&A session from 7 to 7:30 p.m. And you can learn about progress to date on this initiative, links to virtual reality tools, and complete location-by-location adaption option preference surveys at www.cityofsantacruz.com/resilientcoast. And that looks like the end of the URL. I just want to note that Tiffany was the first guest on Sustainability Now and talked about this program, and you can find that in the Sustainability Now archive. So you're listening to Sustainability Now. This is Ronnie Lipschitz. My guest today is Myra Hernandez, who is an organizer for the Community Water Center in South Santa Cruz County and in Monterey County, where she works on the provision of safe water to particularly minority and underrepresented communities. Myra, I wanted to clarify something here, and it sort of leads us to the question of I asked you this question about the history of water systems in California. When we talk about well-based water provision, we're really talking about sort of small-scale companies, right? I mean, it's not like people have their own connection to a well, or they're not going to a well and drawing water, right? They do get tap water, but it's a small kind of distribution system, right?
We have what are called private and shared wells. So a private well is only one connection to a household. And so the property owner has the sole responsibility of maintaining and monitoring that private well. But to your point, they're not going out to the well and getting the water directly, no. So, you know, there's piping that's from the well to the household. And then for shared wells, you know, those are 2 to 14 connections. And connections mean households, right? And so those are small water systems. But again, they are not monitored as well as, per se, public water systems. But they are monitored by the county. And they are only monitored for bacteria, nitrate, and arsenic. That's it. Uh-huh. And again, the households are responsible for, getting treatment systems if needed, maintaining the system. They are responsible. There's limited resources for them. But thanks to, this SAFER program, we are hoping that they'll have more opportunities if folks have, water systems that are out of compliance. There will be more funding opportunities to implement solutions.
Mm-hmm. Do people pay for the water when they get that they get from these shared and individual systems?
So it depends. For private wells, there's usually a service fee that they have to pay to the county for doing the monitoring. I mean, for shared wells, they have to pay a fee. But for private wells, there's no real fee that they have to pay unless, here specifically we have the Pajaro Valley Water Management Agency. Mm-hmm. And they focus on groundwater on our basins and maintaining a certain level of groundwater. And there's a fee that they have to pay annually. But other than that, for folks that are on private or shared wells, there's no real charge like a public system where you get your water bill and you have to pay every month. Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a move afoot to, to bring water basins more under state regulation. I don't know exactly the details, but to get back to this, so this leads us to this question of human right. So I know I asked you this question, and you told me you weren't really familiar with it. But I mentioned earlier that economists tend to argue against the idea of a human right to water, right? A human right to water conveys the idea that a certain amount of water should be provided free, basically, to people, to meet their basic needs, whatever those might be. Economists tend to argue that, water should be regarded as a commodity that's priced, at a particular level, so that the revenues can be used to extend and improve service. And I don't know if you've thought about this, but if there is no, if there is no money coming in to pay for the distribution systems, then they're hardly going to be maintained, right? And concern about water contamination is going to be fairly low on the list of the owner. That's not a question, mm-hmm. right? That's a statement. But do you have any thoughts about this idea of the human right to water? Right. I mean, it seems so automatic, and yet rights can be given and rights can be taken away. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a declaration, right? And no one can disagree with it. I don't disagree with it. The state declares it, but then what does the state do about it? Does this ever come up?
That's a good question. What I can say is that I'm not an economist, so I can't really speak to that. But what I can say is that the human right to water is vitally important. And Community Water Center, we don't think of water as a commodity mm-hmm. that should be affordable to some people and yet out of reach for, vulnerable communities. We believe that safe water is a human right, not a privilege. And that's why we are dedicated to ensuring that all Californians have access to safe, clean, and affordable drinking water, regardless of, their zip code or their financial status. We really believe that water must be available to every single person because we can't live without water.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, I don't disagree with that at all. And I wasn't assuming you were an economist. I was just raising that particularly, in the years that I've been doing work and research on various kinds of water issues, I keep encountering this particular argument. But Do you think the state's water supply system and the systems you're looking at are examples of structural racism?
Yeah, so that's another great question. And, you know, there's an intersection of environmental justice and racial injustice, right?
Mm-hmm,
And they're not necessarily exclusive. So there is some overlap, and I don't think there's any institution that's completely untouched by it. And we know that communities most impacted by water contamination, drought, and even water affordability are most often communities of color. And a report by the Environmental Working Group this month found that as nitrate levels rise, the likelihood that a community is majority Latino also goes up, especially in the San Joaquin Valley. So these are the communities that we work with, as well as similar families, you know, throughout the Central Coast and Central Valley.
Yeah, no, my question had more to do with the sort of historical, you know, construction of water provision and distribution systems, right? If you look at the history of water systems, they usually start in cities. But I mean, if you look at the California water system, right, it was built to primarily provide agriculture mm-hmm. with water, right? And the water rights were acquired by wealthy and powerful interests. And when you get down to the smaller scale, right, there's a sense in which if you look at shared community water systems, the kinds that you're focusing on, right, the mm-hmm. owners of the resource have to provide water, right? I mean, that's a kind of a basic need. But the quality of the provision is a different matter. Right, and it may be they can't afford to do better, or they just say, well, you know, what are people complaining about? They've got water, and it's not my business to make sure that it's safe and clean. And, you know, inevitably, since it's poor communities who are being exposed this way, there seems to me to be a kind of a racist underpinning to that. Again, it's not a question, and I don't want to be lecturing you, but it struck me that that's, you know, that to the extent, I mean, that infrastructural systems, as a rule, right, have been built, and not just in the United States, but they've been built to serve wealthier populations, and you know, that's not something that's unique to California or to the communities that you're working with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, I taught for 30 years, so I tend to fall into lecture mode. I don't want to overstate that. Well, I'll tell you what, let me take a break here, and then I want to come back and talk a little bit about the Agua Coalition, which is discussed, you know, on your website, and what our listeners can do to support your work. Okay? So you're listening to Sustainability Now on Community Radio K-Squid 90.7 FM on your radio dial and ksquid.org streaming on the internet. Alex?
Thanks, Ronnie. Join K-Squid today at 6 p.m. for our monthly program, Reflections on Buddhism. Each program features a conversation between Patrick McGinn and the Venerable Tenzin, a local Buddhist nun and teacher. This month's topic is Buddhism in the West. Join us for a look at the universal aspects of Buddhism and how it speaks to the human condition everywhere, including America and Europe. That's Sunday from 6 to 7 p.m. on 90.7 FM, K-Squid, many voices, one station. Back to you, Ronnie.
Hello, everybody. You're listening to Sustainability Now. This is Ronnie Lipschitz, and my guest today on the show is Myra Hernandez, who works for the Community Water Center at its Watsonville office, where she is a community organizer. We've been talking about safe water, clean water, health, access, the human right to water, and some technical issues as well. So, Myra, on the website, there is a page about the Agua Coalition. And what is that?
Yeah, so the AGUA Coalition, AGUA stands for La Asociación de Gente Unida por el Agua, which is the Association of People United for Water. Mm-hmm. So the history of AGUA is that in early 2006, 50 residents from 12 different impacted communities and four nonprofit orgs in Tulare County convened a meeting to discuss the local water challenge that they were facing. And so it became clear that many communities face similar problems, including widespread of nitrate contamination. And it also became clear that the root causes of those problems could only be addressed regionally rather than on a community-by-community basis. And so mm-hmm. the group decided to form a coalition to provide a unified voice for systemic water quality improvement throughout the Central Valley. You know, it's important to note that this group has been meeting monthly for over 14 years now. And so, you know, the movement continues, and we are actually working on bringing AGUA to the Central Coast currently because they are great advocates in the water world, and they, you know, advocated to obtain the SB 200, which was signed back in July of 2019. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of the same issues that they had in the Central Valley here in the Central Coast. But essentially, they are advocates who want to ensure that everyone has access to safe drinking water, and that our groundwater is being protected and sustained, because, you know, the 2014 drought was a real challenge for a lot of folks, not only in the Central Valley but in the Central Coast as well. So they advocate regionally to ensure that we have the right protections and that we have funds to implement interim and long-term solutions.
Okay. And what kind of other work do you do? You've got some materials about local water boards and the fight for water justice. And I was just wondering what sorts of issues arise. What are local water boards? What sorts of issues arise? Especially in agricultural areas around these these organizations.
Yeah, so we do work, well, our water board work is mainly focused in the Central Valley. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, we focus on making sure that our community partners have access to information, and, you know, we empower them to take seats at the table where, you know, these decisions are being made on, you know, affordability issues and, you know, if there's contamination, what needs to be done to find and implement solutions. And so we help community partners that are being impacted by drinking water issues to become more informed, and then, you know, essentially run for or, you know, apply to be part of their boards, their water boards, to be at the table and have a voice and represent their community.
Mm-hmm. Are these the water boards the same as the water districts in the Central Valley, you know, the ones who distribute water for agriculture, or is this something different? Are these something different?
So it's something different. There's a lot of boards, you know. We have the state water board, the regional water board, then we have the local water boards. It's a big net of boards, but it's different in this case.
And what can participation in the water board do? You know, you just talked about running for seats, right, on a water board?
Mm-hmm.
You know, what can someone do if they're able to get elected?
Well, we, you know, in the Central Valley, we helped a community partner become president of the board. Oh. And she just, you know, brought the board to be more organized, because a lot of these boards, you know, they're not the best. And so we make sure that our community partners are well organized. They know what to do, how to, you know, find resources. And so that's the value that they bring to these types of boards. More information, how to get in contact with folks at the state, how to obtain funding, you know, those types of things.
Do they have any jurisdiction over, you know, water quality and water provision, or are they more the sort of advisory boards?
No, I think they do. I can't say for certain because that's not an area of work that I'm really involved in.
Uh-huh, yeah.
But I believe they are.
Okay, so, and what can our listeners do to help you in your, you know, the organization's mission?
Yeah, so, you know, you've been referencing our webpage a lot, and we have a lot of good resources there, so folks can go to communitywatercenter.org to read more about the work that we're doing, find resources, and sign up for our newsletter, and they can also donate to our cause. And they can follow us on social media. We have Twitter, Instagram, Facebook account. It's usually at Community Water Center. And, you know, I would really encourage everyone to learn more about where their drinking water comes from. And, again, we have a lot of great resources on our website. But if folks, you know, find it a little challenging or they're just not tech savvy, they can always reach out to us directly, and we'll be very happy to help them, you know, get more information about where their water comes from, what their water quality is like. And, you know, in the Central Coast, we have the free regional bottled water program. So if folks mm-hmm. are on well water, they can call us to see if they qualify for this program. And, you know, if they're interested, they can help us advocate for more drinking water protections at the local and the state level. And that's for anyone that's listening, you know. There's never too many advocates. So we always want to see the movement keep on going.
Do you have any you know, possibilities or needs for volunteers?
Yeah. You know, we always... welcome any volunteers, any folks that are interested in working with us, shadowing the work that we do. Yeah, so if anybody's interested, they can always come or contact us, and you know, we can see where we can use the support.
Okay, is there anything else that you want to add to our discussion?
You know, I just want to thank you, Ronnie, for having us. You know, I think a lot of people don't know about, you know, the water quality issues that are impacting millions of people, not only in California, but around the world, right? So I think it's really important that folks, you know, do a little bit of research, stay informed, and if they are willing and have the time, you know, to advocate and participate in local and state level hearings where, you know, people talk about the protections for our groundwater. It's really important to have community voices at these hearings. And we at Community Water Center are, you know, slowly but surely empowering folks to start joining these meetings. Because if no one uses their voice to say that there's an issue, then no one's going to do anything about it, right? So we got to keep on moving forward and making sure that our water is safe, clean, and affordable for everyone. Because, again, drinking water is a right, not a privilege.
Well, that's an eloquent conclusion. So I want to thank you, Myra, for being my guest on the show. And I just want to sort of reiterate that a lot of us don't think about water until it stops coming out of the tap. You know, it's sort of there automatically. But there are lots and lots of people in the world who don't have that luxury and who don't have access to safe and clean water. So this is a really important issue. And as the climate changes and water supplies become more problematic, it's something that may start to affect many, many more people than has been the case. So I'm supportive of your work, and I hope you're successful in what you're doing. And so thank you again.
Thank you.
Okay, in 2 weeks, my guest will be Dr. Joseph Stewart, who not long ago received his PhD from UC Santa Cruz and is now a postdoctoral fellow at UC Davis. He's working on forest regeneration after wildfires and in response to climate change, and the impacts of climate change on biodiversity and species migration. He's done some interesting work on cute little, I think they're called pikas, in the mountains. And so he may talk about that as well. And you'll be able to find out more about his work at the post about this show that'll appear on K-Squid over the next week or so. So that's Sunday, November 1st, 5 to 6 p.m., right here on KSQD 90.7 FM and KSQD.org on the internet. And as a reminder for those of you who get up with the sun, which is coming up later and later until in November, shows from this particular 5 to 6 p.m. Sunday slot, and that includes Be Bold America, are always rebroadcast the following Tuesday mornings from 6 to 7 a.m. And if you'd like to hear previous Sustainability Now broadcasts, you can find them at ksqd.org/sustainabilitynow and on Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Pocket Casts, among other podcast sites. I want to thank Alex Snyder for today's excellent engineering and everyone else at the station who makes this show possible. So until until next every other Sunday, Sustainability Now.
Wizard of changes, water, water, water.